Welcome to the Tinnelly Talks podcast, where we dive into the common legal issues facing today's community associations. Whether you're a manager, board member, or homeowner, you're sure to pick up on some nuggets of advice to help you build a successful community in this ever-evolving and changing world.
Welcome to Tinnelly Talks, the show that breaks down the legal issues affecting community associations. I'm Ramona Acosta.
And I'm Steve Tinnelly.
And today we're talking about mental health in our communities with Dr. Jorge Galindo of the Orange County Sheriff's Department. Dr. Galindo is a licensed psychotherapist in Orange County, California, who specializes in the evaluation and treatment of forensic cases, adolescents, and families. His primary areas of forensic practice are with juvenile offenders and with the Family Law Court, where he's a recognized expert witness. For over 20 years, he has helped individuals, couples, and families who are facing relational and mental health issues find solutions to their difficulties. Dr. Galindo also works for the Orange County Sheriff's Department, where he is a reserve captain. His primary duties involve overseeing the reserve units for SWAT, transportation, and the Sheriff's Response Team Mobile Field Force Squads. He has worked in operations for over a decade in patrol, warrant service, custody, and transportation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we wanted to talk about mental health in our communities. As a law firm, we work with homeowners associations and managers who operate these community associations. And we've noticed in the last, well, I would say, you know, since 2020, but even before then, just a general loss of civility with our homeowners and with our communities in general. And I love that you're a psychotherapist, but you also work with the Sheriff's Department. So you have that community aspect and that community view, which we so often see here. I think from a global standpoint, I think most people, they see in the news, they see the effects of the pandemic, and they see the riots, and they see all the stuff that's going on with politics. And I think there's a disconnect between what you see on television and what it's actually doing at home in our communities and in our cities and in our neighborhood associations. So that's kind of what we want to talk about. So not so much mental illness per se, but just what's happening with society and the pandemic and what that's doing to us from a mental and emotional well-being standpoint. So I know that we talked about the pandemic, politics, civil unrest. We're seeing a lot of neighbor-to-neighbor disputes in our homeowners associations, just neighbors fighting with each other. You know, I saw a picture the other day of a homeowner with a BLM sign next to a neighbor with a Trump sign. And so sometimes here is a law firm that kind of turns into a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute about people like complaining about the barking dog next door and the kids. And now the manager's getting all these complaints, and how do we feel these complaints? And it's just everybody on edge and everybody being angry at each other. And so we wanted to talk about, how do we bring that sense of community back to our neighborhoods? How do we live next door to each other? How do we deal with these types of situations?
Yeah, it's a very important and relevant point right now.
Yeah, just from your perspective, you know, one of the things that's interesting for us, right, as lawyers, we operate, we're advisors. We counsel, right? We counsel on law issues. And what I like about homeowners associations is that we deal with the psychology, because we work with all volunteers. The people that are there that are on the board are not getting paid to do that. They're there because they love their community, or because they might not have liked a prior board, or they have a specific issue that's bothering them. So we're in a position where we often have to counsel these people. And as Ramona said, not only the boards, but the managers that we work with are finding ourselves, you know, in an even more difficult position than we typically are, because we understand the psychology and just what's going on all around us is affecting kind of the mental and emotional well-being. So a lot of our industry partners that we work with at this point in time are feeling even more spread thin and even more battered over the head, because they don't understand how homeowners are reacting and how these board members are reacting. Why is this person coming at me so hot? Is there any insight that you can give us as to kind of what the mental and emotional backdrop is that we might be dealing with homeowners or board members on the other side of the email chain or the phone call?
Certainly. Yeah, I think you're dealing with what a lot of people are dealing with, but you are dealing with it as an advisor or helper, so you're getting kind of the backlash of it versus being in the middle of it. But the two things, I mean, two sort of social issues that happened at the same time is the political climate that was very polarizing and kind of, you know, a difficult time with that, and the pandemic hitting at the same time, which kind of caused or exacerbated what was already going on and causing this. people are human beings, are social creatures by nature. We're networky by nature, and we need a sense of family and community. And that family and community ties buffers us against mental illness, actually, buffers you against loneliness, buffers you against being overly self-centered, which from our field's perspective is probably the root cause of most of the social problems that we have and most interpersonal problems is self-interest versus more communal interest. Hmm. So when you're with people and forced to be in that or choose to be in that environment, it causes you to become more empathic. So there's actual studies and research on this to show that empathy is something that you both have, but is also can be learned and has a neurochemistry behind it. And we're with people, when we're with our in-group or people that we like or that are, you know, affiliates, we tend to become more empathic. When we're disengaged from that and become individual, we tend to get less empathic. And empathy is really the name of the game when it comes to dealing with other people and understanding people's position, right? I mean, that's kind of the definition of it. So between these two things, it has caused people to become very withdrawn into us and them subgroups, right? And we like our in-group. We then don't like the out-group, even if we used to like those people. You can see this in families and in you know, social media circles where people are blocking each other and getting crazy with former friends and family members for years over that. And certainly in your situation in communities and neighborhoods where those become little enclaves and cliques, or where people are very scared and just becoming socially isolated and are very fearful. And when you get isolated and fearful, you get paranoid. And paranoid, not like seeing space aliens, but paranoid, if you broke the word down, right? It's para, kinda.
Yeah.
Gnosos, knowledge, knowing something. It's kinda knowing. You're not thinking real clearly about things.
Got it.
You're sort of projecting into a lot of negativity, a lot of fearfulness, and you get very, very self-interested and very insular. And unfortunately, all that causes a bunch of other problems because it's against our nature as humans. So we tend to get anxious and depressed also, which now you have all the problems, right? You got just the social problem, the perfect storm. Yeah, and that's what this has created. Because other types of catastrophic events cause people to come together. Communities come together. An earthquake, a fire, right? There's action that can be taken. There's delegation of things that can happen. This is an isolating dilemma, right? Don't be around anyone. They could kill you, mm-hmm. or you could get sick, you know?
So for the manager or the attorney that's working with this individual and say, wow, this response is different, or I don't understand why this is so challenging, you're saying that this individual's forced withdrawal from their community or their network has caused them to lose empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, they might be exhibiting more aggression, more anxiety, more paranoia, and that's kind of what's fueling the response?
Yes. It's a fearful-based type of situation, which has some reality to it and some real concern. But if you allow that to germinate too much, you can get really wound up about that and really fearful for your life, basically, right? Something that is not just about, oh, I might get the flu or might be unhealthy. I might die, or my loved ones might die. That's very disconcerting and becomes now the primary focus of their life, right? Kind of to heck with everyone else.
Got it.
How dare you try to schedule
this contractor for the HOA to come onto my property? This actually might kill my family. Why don't you see it that way?
Perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like that you started this with the more fearful we get, the more self-centered we become. And it's not an ego thing. It's, you know, we're worried about ourselves and we're worried about our families and what's happening. And I think that we get that from the homeowner standpoint, but I think sometimes the homeowners forget that from the association standpoint. And this manager that you're yelling at on the other end of the phone, they're feeling like, look, I'm an essential worker and I'm having to come to work and I'm having to work this out with you. What about my family? You know, and board members, I think, are in the same boat where they're volunteer board members who are making these decisions. And they're saying, okay, well, you know, you're getting upset with us, the board and the association, because of rules that we have to put in place to deal with the pandemic, let's say. But we're trying to protect our family and we're trying to protect our association. And I feel like everybody's angry because they're worried about their own units.
Yes.
I think that's interesting, and I think that's one of the things that we forget is that we're all dealing with it, maybe in a different way, but we're all dealing with it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what, you know, in your professional experience, if you have an individual, whether, you know, they've been conditioned to it or whether there's been a, you know, a pandemic or some type of event that's made them retreat into that, people that are listening, Steve Ramona, please ask the doctor. When I'm dealing with these people, and I might have had a good relationship with this homeowner or with this board member last year, but they are now in a position where they've taken all this anxiety, they've been, you know, disconnected from everything, and now they're acting in a certain way. Is there any recommendations that you have how to approach an individual who might be overcome with those types of things in order to get them to kind of, I don't know, get the message or receive the message in a way that's more productive?
That's a very good question. And yeah, there's sort of a, there's a general formula for that that comes actually from sort of business psychology or industrial psychology, which is occasionally in hierarchical organizations, the kind of business end or the bad news travels downwards and is kind of forced on people and has to be expected. And you again lose that chain of empathy where the employee is just worried about themselves, right? They don't think about, I wonder what it would like to be a manager. And what's the middle manager situation from the owner's perspective, right? Things like that. So the ability to have discussions about what it's like to be in a particular position and how that's like being in another position so that there's similarities and also an ability to kind of soften and connect with that. Mm-hmm. On an individual level, the formula, I suppose, for that is always try to meet people, especially during emotional times or that are emotional, that when they are emotional, with their emotion first. So this is actually something that's I've practiced more in my law enforcement career, especially doing patrol-related things where you're at a call or you're dealing with someone who's maybe getting arrested or maybe about to get arrested or they've been a victim of a crime, and they're very upset. And if you try to advance your legal responsibilities or what needs to happen too quickly, it actually winds up escalating that and causing problems versus dealing with their emotional self first, knowing where they're at, getting that, combining, joining with that. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, man, this is what a mess. Boy, that's a bad scene. I totally get it. Same thing with your deal, right? Understanding how the person is being affected by this, how the homeowner might be upset, and joining with that so they let go of that defensiveness or that need to make sure you know how important this is, and then you're together in that, right? You can problem solve or deal with something that helps them see you more side by side, looking in the same direction versus looking at each other and being contesting. So very important with emotional people to work through the emotional part first, put the business to the side. Don't try to worry too fast about explaining things and being rational, right? The rational mind and the emotional mind are two different parts of our brain, actually. They require different sets of neurochemistry, and the emotional part will usually win, especially when you're upset. It will tend to be a little bit more fight or flight based and more like self-preservation oriented. So it'll get you ramped up pretty quick.
So homeowner, I understand the challenge with the pandemic. You're still having to pay your HOA dues, even though the pool is closed. And of course, it would be easier to have the pool be open, especially you with little kids. I can't imagine what you're going through, not having the kids being able to take them to the pool. I'm in a position where I have to make these awkward calls and I have to do these things and I don't enjoy it either. This is tough. You're saying kind of get with
them.
That's
perfect.
Relate with them on an emotional level and then say, how can we work together productively? Because we've got something that there's a challenge here that we need to overcome, and it's going to be easier if we understand each other and move forward towards.
Yes, that's
towards that.
That's
end.
Great.
Got it.
Yeah, one of the things that I keep coming back to, it just in my mind, and you said it earlier, is that as human beings, we're built for community. We're built to be social. And several months ago, it kind of just dawned on me, you know, when we talk about babies and we talk about preemies or babies in the ICU, there's a big push to swaddle and to cuddle those babies, right? It's good for their emotional health. It helps them grow. And it just dawned on me at some point that if that is for babies, if we're saying that in order to help a baby fully mature, we need to touch them, we need to hold them, we need to empathize with them, that doesn't go away when we grow into adulthood.
That's
right?
A great point.
So our homeowners, they need that same. We're not allowed to hug. We're not allowed to go to the pool together. We're not allowed to go to the gym together. We're not allowed to socialize for us as managers. We're not allowed to go to our trade shows. We're not allowed to go to the bar. So that is having an emotional impact on our emotional well-being and our mental well-being, because we're not getting that physical and emotional contact with people.
Yes, especially the bar part.
Yes.
Very important.
Yeah, full disclaimer, managers, we are not advising you to go hug every homeowner in your community right now. You don't talk that. But the point is there, right? I mean, what do we do to establish that connection, which is kind of another on the flip side of it. Yeah, dealing with homeowners is dealing with one thing. But day in and day out, we have job responsibilities, right? And more companies are shifting to a more remote workspace, which has its benefits, but it also has its downsides. And I think a lot of people are too quick to say, like, oh, wow, tech is so fantastic. We've got Zoom, right? We've got GoToMeeting. We have all these different solutions that will basically replace that for us. Do you know if there's any science or studies that kind of flush that out? You know what I mean? Is it as effective? Is it more effective in building a sense of community?
Yeah, I took a peek at some of the – it's more what I would call anecdotal literature. It's sort of observational literature, which research for our field, really when you say research, you want some empirical data, right? Mm-hmm. Something that's been vetted scientifically and has some – modicum of science behind it, right? Observational research is valid to some degree as well. So it's more of that. But what I noticed at the beginning of this was how great it was, just like you said, right? People were very optimistic. And like we were talking about earlier, the curve with change often goes from uninformed optimism, like, okay, this is going to be great, to very quickly uninformed pessimism, mm-hmm. and then sort of works its way out, you know, on the curve kind of coming up, and it goes kind of up and down. But things get more looked at more realistically versus emotionally, mm-hmm. in that respect. But in terms of the remote workspace, people that have technical jobs and that are interested in technical things, maybe like computer programmers and things that are very techie, are often, as personality types, not quite as social and don't need as much of that connection anyway. So it didn't seem to be as affecting them as much. But for people who need that community, for management, for the people, for salespeople, I have a lot of patients who are in commercial real estate, and, you know, meetings and being around people and having networking is essential. And it's caused them all to be very – it caused a bit of depression, mm-hmm. in almost everyone because of that lack of – being together and the teamwork and the camaraderie. So I think there's different jobs, you know, it's not a global or universal, it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. There are some personality types that do a certain type of job that don't lend to that. But for the most part, it wouldn't be a good idea, which is why we have companies and businesses and this model anyway, right? Mm-hmm. It's already been shown to be worldwide, fairly effective way of dealing with things because of the social need, mm-hmm. because of the encouragement, the competition, right? Even if you don't notice it, competitive or type A people are always looking what everyone else is doing and not wanting to be left out and being totally. Trying to raise the bar, mm-hmm. right? Which is productive for a business and ultimately makes more money and makes more gratification in the job and in the work. Not to mention the oversight, right? It's very hard from a management perspective to oversee people and motivate them from upper and middle management if they're not there. Mm-hmm. Right, I mean, being together and having eyes on.
Yeah, the chat window can only go so far.
Right. Yeah, and it's very impersonal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I noticed that in testifying, just the tension on me in the court to perform, to be really on point, is just much greater than it is when I'm testifying by Zoom. It's not that I don't do my work or you know, have a glib attitude toward it, but I can just, as I'm feeling the sensation of what's this like, that the level that I'm performing at on a Zoom is not the same. And I would say the same is for the attorneys, mm-hmm. Not criticizing their performance at all, but that general sort of, you know, community and positive in a court setting tension that you need in order to get to the truth, in order to really vet things out and to operate at a high standard, it's just not there.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much that you feel in a room, and you mentioned the salespeople, you know, which I'm one of those, and, you know, we were remote for about 6 weeks in the beginning of the pandemic, and I always considered myself to be a homebody until I was forced to be at home, and then I realized what kind of a social butterfly I really am.
Right.
But I'm good at my job because I feed off of a room, mm. and I feel the emotions in the room. I get excited by the people who are around me. And you're right, in that Zoom environment, you know, trying to do digital marketing, it's more difficult because you're not getting that. You're not getting the same emotional connection.
No.
Yeah.
I would say it's an impossible thing. We do a lot of speaking things, and I'll have, you know, canned jokes that I'll typically like to say. and I'll expect, you know, some response from the room or whatever. And it's just a very weird thing when I'm looking at myself on a screen speaking, right, because they have the speaker box highlighted, making jokes to myself that I can't hear anybody laughing at. But, you know, it's just a new sensation and you have to kind of roll with it.
But to your point, I think that some of the phone calls that the managers are getting, some of the issues that the attorneys might be dealing with could be caused by somebody who is stuck in isolation at home, and that anger might be a result of that depression or that isolation.
Certainly, yeah. Yeah, that's in the family, sort of the context of families, the amount of calls I've gotten about mood disorder related things, but it's primarily the anxiety and depression. Have been very high, probably more than any time in my career, which is makes sense given this, especially with adolescents and kids, which then, in a secondary way, puts stress on the parents and the family because they're worried about them. Mm-hmm. And especially with all the social media, which being withdrawn, I mean, it was already out of hand. Now mm-hmm. That's all they got, right? Mm-hmm. And it causes like kind of a secondary problem and a what's called a forced-to-feel dynamic, which is that you'd think that they're supported, right? On social media, it keeps them connected. Actually, social media is not a very social thing, right? It's a very individual thing that people use to sort of manipulate people to gain acceptance or gain something and launch their personal views, right? It's a very all about me and my stuff type of forum, just because the way it's designed. And kids have actually been feeling like being bullied or forced to feel things to be part of something, and that's caused them even more depression with the social media. So it turns out that had a very unexpected kind of paradoxical effect on a lot of the kids, and I read a couple articles about that, but also experienced it with some of the patients, that kids are blocking their social media or I'm getting rid of this, right, spontaneously, which whoever heard of a kid saying I'm shutting down my social media, right? It's usually the parents going, okay, enough's enough of that.
But it's true, because I think adults have been that way too. I know I never took a break from social media because it's so important to my job in that mm-hmm. marketing world. You know, but I know, Steve, I think you were thinking about it at some point, because even social media got very angry and there was so much vitriol at one point. And just, you know, you couldn't even give an opinion without somebody slamming you. What do you call those, Steve? You call it like keyboard activists or something?
Oh, yeah, keyboard commandos or whatever. You know, that's what the situation is. But it's right. I mean, yeah, professionally you want to do it, you have to have social media, right? But the funny thing is, like, social media is supposed to be about self-expression. This is 90% of the things I do privately with my family, and they're all G-related. But for whatever reason, I'm like, well, I'm hesitant to post that because it might be interpreted in this way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just this weird forum that I've always really had a hard time accepting. And, you know, even though there's kind of the professional need to do it, it's a challenge. And I've never heard anybody put it in that way before. Well, it's social media, but no, it's a very me thing. And I think that's exactly right. Whatever you're doing there, it's not to interact with the group. It's to kind of advance some type of narrative type of image of yourself.
That's
that,
correct.
In my case, a lot of times it isn't true because I'm holding back the stuff. Oh my gosh, I was doing something, but I was at a place and we weren't wearing masks, and I don't want to put that online because I don't want people to condemn me for not wearing a mask. And isn't that strange that we're having to deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very that's the problem with it. And imagine if you're an adult and that's an issue. If you're a teen, right, or younger, right, with an unformed brain, right, that's primarily an emotional type of way of dealing with the world and thinking, can be very catastrophic for them. It really doesn't have a lot of upside in what I've seen. It's a fairly negative force in most of their lives.
Well, and I would imagine if you're stuck at home, you're isolated, your only form of being able to socialize is social media, and it all it's doing is contributing to that isolation and that depression.
Yeah. Which unintended, right? You'd think that it's a way of connecting, but it's interesting that the kids have even sort of figured that out on their own without the parental prompting of enough of this, and you got, you know, stop the Snapchatting, and this is crazy.
So you're actually seeing children that are saying, hey, I'm putting this thing.
Yeah.
We're getting, it's not doing anything.
That's good,
causing me to, you know, more stress than it's not, and inventing, even coining this term of the force to feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Type of situation that you have to be part of something, or if you're not, you're on the outs of it, right? You're already on the outs of all this kind of stuff and stressed out. That's the last thing that someone at that age needs. Mm-hmm. No one needs it, but adults were able to mitigate things a little bit better. And for kids, sometimes they can. It's a real emotionally difficult for them.
Yeah, and like you said, then that just adds more stress to the parent.
You're right. it's a fam. Then it becomes a big family drama.
Well, that's incredible. I have a child that'll sit there and say, "Well, listen, this isn't good for me. I need to disconnect from this. I need to keep my distance." Another talking point, as I'm reading the script here, a lot of times what we do, right, working for these communities, right, we were a customer service oriented business, whether you're in community management or your law firm advising. And you always want to be there and say, listen, based on my professional experience, I'm here to help, right? This is my chosen profession. I'm working with volunteers, right? I don't represent, you know, big corporations anymore, dealing with C-level execs, right? Because I like doing this, solving problems, and people appreciate it. And sometimes there are people that appreciate it. And no matter how much you do, they're never going to appreciate it. But for whatever reason, you take it upon yourself to be like, no, I, Steve or Ramona or manager, might not be doing a good enough job. Why can't this person see that I'm the fantastic human being that I am and I'm trying to help them? Is there any guidance that you can give us? At what point do we say, you know, enough? How do we compartmentalize that and say, you know, this is just a prickly pear of a homeowner that we need to just let go, you know, and still keep civil versus, no, I need to put in some more effort here. Maybe I wasn't, you know, empathetic enough, or I need to approach it a different way.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure to subscribe to the Tinnelly Talks podcast at tinnellylaw.com and never miss an episode. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that person you're talking about is a small minority of people, but they exist all over the place, and every job, I think, faces them. I know in law enforcement, we get trained to deal with them, right? That you never did a good enough job at the call, or you know,
exactly.
Always a problem for me with patients, even, you know, oh, your fee's too much, you don't have enough appointment times, whatever, right? It's never good enough for them. Those people are actually not helpable. And one of the mistakes that they make is they get their emotionality kind of connects with your emotionality. And usually they get you to start feeling the helplessness and hopelessness they feel as a general person, which is it's called projection. So they, in psychology, right, we got fancy term for everything. So with projection, what you are is, if you're unhappy, I want you to be unhappy too, right? My life sucks. I'm, perpetually upset. I'd like you to join me in that, right? And it's not a conscious thing. It's sort of unconscious. But the way to do that, especially for professional people, people providing a service, they're easy pickings, because all you got to do is tell them, I don't like your service, right? Or be disenchanted or disenfranchised with whatever it is they're doing. And really, that you have to vet a little bit for that, because the average person can do that too, right? If there's something legitimate. The key to this is always recognizing, keeping your rational, right, your thinking mind going. Not what you feel like, not that pressure and getting, you know, argumentative or whatever. So if you feel yourself getting hot, your blood pressure rising, getting exasperated, it's because they got you, right? They got the hook in you. But if you're thinking, I've done exactly what I need to do here, right? I don't know that there's much more that can be done. Figuring, you know, rationally out if there's some other steps that maybe you could do. Once you realize you're at that point, the key is to disengage from that person as quickly as you can. And always in a professional setting, you want to do that, you know, empathically and quick and kindly, but pretty fast, because that's what will shut down that forum for them, right? Because they like an audience. That's their main thing, is they like people to be there to witness all their complaints.
So when you do disengage, can you walk us through the person? What's the name for this person? Is there like a clinical name for this type of person that we're talking about?
Yeah, but it's not suitable for okay. On-air. It starts with an A.
Okay. I got it. All right. So this A-class person, we're going to talk about the A-class person. Once we disengage from this A-class person, what could we expect to be going on in their psychology and their mentality?
Even before that, I'd like to know how do we disengage? Because I think one of the things that you and I talked about in preparing for this is that a law enforcement officer can't just say, okay, you don't want to be helped and just walk away.
Right.
I mean, they have to solve the situation.
Yes.
And as a community manager and as a law firm, same thing. You know, yes, this might be a difficult person, but we still have to solve the situation.
Yeah.
So how do we disengage from?
Yeah, that's a good question, especially in sort of the litigious environment that we're in, right? That you have to always be careful and watch it with people. But one of the things that I learned from a really good deputy, actually. She used to ask people that would get all uppity and crazy, right? She was probably one of the best training people I rode with ever in patrol. She would ask people when we got to this point, what would you like to have happen right now? And I just thought, what a genius question, right? What is it that you want from me? Or what is it that you'd like to see happen? Or how would you like this to end, right? And often it's very disarming for the person where then they feel like, oh, you care. Because ultimately, these are people that don't feel like anyone cares about them. You know, if you got into their whole psychology, right, that would be a 10-year psychoanalysis of how they got this way. You don't want to do that. You just want to take for granted. They're not just being difficult to being difficult. They usually have some fairly significant traumas or, you know, psychological, emotional difficulties. That's why the disengaging is important. But if you give them that empowerment to say, hey, I'd like to hear from you. What is it that you would like to have happen? They're then forced to come up with their own solution. And sometimes they will. And then you can go, oh, that I can do. Do it. And you're out of there. Or you can explain to them very clearly, that's not our job. That's not what we do. Here's why. And disengage in a sort of conscious and concrete way with them, right? Then they don't feel like you just kind of got in an argument and bailed out on them. You've answered their question. You asked what they wanted to do. And in terms of like documentation or being professional, it's perfect because you asked them, right? All you're doing is answering questions that you asked. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's a good sort of recursive dialogue in terms of doing that. And for some reason, it tends to that difficult person tends to disengage when you do that. And sometimes even becomes a little bit insightful. I've had it happen a few times where people kind of get the point to themselves and thought, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think I've used this intuitively in my own life where I've been dealing with these difficult people, and it's never, what would you like me to do? Just explain to me what it is specifically that you think I should be doing to help you right now. And I've seen that before. Well, there's this, and you walk through, well, this is done, and that's, but what else is the situation? And you're right. I've, you know, as you're saying it, I've seen this. I've actually been surprised that they've been, you know, hot to trot, foaming at the mouth, and then all of a sudden they have to sit back and think, well, how am I going to make myself feel better rather than telling somebody else what it is I think they're doing wrong that's making me feel better?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they've lost all their juice.
That's it.
So for the typical manager, right, that's dealing with these types of things and these – I know I'm thinking of it right now, Ramona, and you could probably laugh too. For a manager to send an email, sorry, homeowner – I must be getting wrong. What is it that you would like to see happen right now? And then they might get back a 30-page email response saying, telling them how horrible they are and bringing up stuff from 10 years ago. Remember when you were 2 hours late giving me the pool key and all these different types of things. But do you think it's good to do it in writing as well as verbally? Or
I suppose if you were for the purposes of documentation or if you thought, this might go somewhere, the writing is always preferable.
Yeah,
and I think
absolutely.
The best way to do it. But in terms of just disengaging from someone that's just being difficult like that, they're real good. You know, customer service people often are very good at this. I've watched it at stores because that's all they do all day. And I don't even know if they know what they're doing or they just figured out, oh, here's the trick. It's like kill them with kindness in a way and like, yeah, boy, that really does. That's terrible. Yeah, that sucks. Well, so what would you like to happen right now? Well, I want all my money back. Well, how about this? We'll give you store credit because we can't give you money because you ruined this thing. You've obviously worn it 100 times. But this we can do, right? And okay, and then, you know, give them some sort of solution or some sort of solace that works. Where when you're upset, you don't think clearly. Like your problem solver is not in its best spot. As soon as you engage in something that's emotional or adversarial, the fight or flight sort of chemicals take over, and it's on now, right? And what you're more interested in is winning or either ditching out or crushing the other person, you know, symbolically.
Yeah.
Or not.
Or
for real. And you know, that wrecks it because now you're engaged and involved in this, and then you're going to hate yourself after, right? You're going to go, what was I doing?
And when you're engaged and involved in it, this type of person, this class A person, that's what they feel good about that then? Do they feel good that they've projected successfully and they've brought you to a mental and emotional state that they swim in and day out? Do they derive satisfaction from that?
There are people who are unconscious that don't know what they're doing. They just do what, you know, do what they do. Uh-huh. And there are people who do, they fall under a kind of a classification called personality disorders that do like that adversarial and difficult relationship because they're interested in sort of power and control and positioning in relationships. They don't just have with anyone really, the natural, normal relationships. It's always a position they're trying to put themselves in. And it's usually a position of victimizer or being in charge or controlling, which two ends of the spectrum that really, if you look at it, meet each other very closely, right? It's more, instead of like a linear spectrum, it's more like a horseshoe. There's a, you know, a lot of similarities between that, those two types. And it's really, it's a, a person who doesn't have very good social skills, not good problem solving, and like I said, probably has a fairly traumatic or difficult interpersonal history with people. They don't trust people very much, or they feel like they've been wronged a lot, or they just like being in dominion over people, right? There's people that straight out have to be the guy or the girl in whatever situation they get into with you. Let them, not for real, but let them think that sometimes is
fun. Got it. And you do that by disengaging from them?
Yeah.
Got it.
Or, wow, you're right, you know. Okay, yeah, I understand. Gee, that's that must be difficult.
Or, yeah, you know, all right,
using,
great.
Again, that empathy.
Well,
and,
that's
peace
all the time
out.
I have now. Right. I'll see you later.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you more about this at another time.
That's interesting. I mean, so that's really powerful. Okay. Well, what about the community manager that feels bad, you know, that sits there and says, okay, well, this person done this, let them go, tried to disengage, but any insight you can give us? Because still, we want to please. We want to do what's right for our client. We want to feel like we're doing a good job. And sometimes it might be tough. Like, well, I totally disengaged from this Class A person because I'm not going to fall for that. But at the end, I don't know. I might not feel satisfied that I did enough or could have done anything that we could tell ourselves or kind of understand big picture. You're saying this person can never be helped. Quit trying to run them over, and you're only going to make it worse by continuing to engage.
Yeah, I mean, which that's the interpersonal dynamic. The sort of external dynamic, which is what they want or things that they can have, those are good strategies to think about, right? Where you can increase some things sometimes. Think of something that's creative that can make them happy, or a good, you know, happy medium. The thing you don't want to do, because it sounds kind of sexy at the beginning, but it doesn't end well, is when you start breaching boundaries for them or start doing special favors. Remember when I talked about the positioning deal?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're in charge of you, right? And they're in that position, and you're going to buy that problem. And remember, if they're unhappy and unhelpable, then why do you think they would be happy because you did this or did that or the other, right? You're basically, it's like a child that you has thrown such a temper tantrum that you finally gave them a cookie. Will they be quiet? Sure. Will they say thank you? Sure. What happens tomorrow night?
Mm-hmm.
And the night after, and the night after. So at some level, people have to, in management, have to be able to say no and have boundaries and be okay with people being upset with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of being an adult and being mature as well, that you can't run around having everyone be happy and pleasing everybody, right?
Not everybody's going to like you, and that's okay.
And if you don't like that, don't be in a position of leadership or management,
mm-hmm.
because it's probably not a good fit. Which there are people, not everyone likes that, right? But if you're part of, I think, leadership and management training is the ability to tolerate some of that type of backlash and tolerate your own emotions about it. Because you brought up a great point of maybe you don't feel good about that, right? You leave feeling like, dang, I wish I could have done more, or got to do something. If there's things that are within reason and reasonable, that's okay. But if it starts becoming that's the mantra, just get ready for that to be the ante to be upped and upped and upped and up. And then the reasonable people will be upset because why does this person throw all these tantrums and do weird stuff and they get something out of it?
Yeah.
And we're trying to follow the rules and be cool.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask both of you is enforcing the rules. Associations have to enforce the governing documents, and that's the manager's job. The manager sends out violation letters, just like, you know, officers have to issue tickets.
Yep.
And just in this current climate, I wonder how much as managers and how much as associations we're contributing to that emotional instability.
Yeah.
When you have somebody who's stuck at home or stuck at home with their kids all day long, and then they get this violation letter because they left their trash cans out too long, can some of the enforcement be paused? Is there a better way to do it so that we can empathize while we're still enforcing? How do we navigate that type of situation? Because we still have to do our jobs.
Yeah.
You know, but I also think that maybe we can pick and choose our battles a little bit.
Absolutely. That's wise. So unlike dealing that for someone who's upset, right, or sort of grinding you for it, that psychology is doing it for the whole community, right? You're doing this across the board for people, or enforcing it like selectively,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, I think that would be a really good policy. And a way to think of that is things that are like in tiers, from a tier one, which is like a trash can being left out, right, to something that's dangerous for the community or painting their house pink, right? We're in the pandemic and I was bored, so I painted my house and it made me feel great. You can't have a pink house here. Right?
Yeah.
So there's like a gradient that you sort of take a median approach to that, and everything south of that are things that you would consider relaxing, because you don't want to just relax everything.
Right.
Because it's hard when you give up control, right? Getting it back is often very difficult. So you got to think about that. and what things are structurally sound that keep the community rolling, that keep you guys in this deal, that keep the sort of general authority or management of the HOAs rolling, and what things, if they happened or didn't, aren't really going to make that big a difference in the big picture. Those are things, I think, like you're saying, the trash can example is great, that you just relax and don't exacerbate the already, you know, bad
mood. It seems like common sense stuff.
It is.
But for whatever reason, I mean, sometimes we might have, and a lot of times we might have board members, right? These are people that are elected to a position of leadership in their communities, oftentimes because there was nobody else that was running. It's not as though they have a large portion of people that are doing that. I mean, it's different for every community. Yeah. But, you know, you pull a large sampling of communities, a good percentage of them will have people that are on the board because they need people on the board. And these people that get on the board for whatever reason, they might be these Class A people that it's a difficult thing to say, hey, we're in a pandemic right now. We talk to the doctor. We need to put these things on a sliding scale, on a tier scale, right? Level 5 is terrible. We'll deal with that. Level 1 is not so terrible. Let's start at level 3 and everything below that. Let's consider relaxing a little bit. But then you might have this one board member who says, no, it's our job and I'm serious. And who knows, it might be that individual that enjoys having the control or being in a position of dominion over the rest of their community. How do you talk sense into somebody like that?
Well, you guys have, in your specific context, you vote on things, right? Like, well, homeowner stuff has to be like majority.
Well, there's a board that votes on it, right? Yeah. So it's a 5-member, 3. But a lot of times this individual who's on the board will sit there and pound their chest or pound the table, and the other board members that are there that are good volunteers just say, I don't want to upset Russ. Okay.
So great example, yeah. A true story example. We saw it in the newspaper at the beginning of the pandemic. So this was May 2020 and you May and June 2020 and you have kids who are graduating high school and they're not having a graduation ceremony because we're still in quarantine. And so you have families who are putting signs up in the front yard cheering on their graduates because that's really the only celebration that these kids are getting. And you have a board member who's walking around the community pulling the signs up out of the ground and throwing them away and telling the manager to send a letter to these homeowners because they put a sign up in the common area. And at some point you have to go, okay, should we be picking our battles a little bit better? Are we contributing? Are we making it worse instead of better? You know, can we just let it go for a couple of weeks and then go? Right? Do we have to agitate the homeowners?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would like to know. Who's fueling the psychology of that board member that's taking it upon themselves to trespass on their neighbor's property to pull graduation signs out of the grass? You know what I mean? Or even on the common area, whatever the deal is. Like, what's, I mean, it's, you know, we joke about it, but obviously that individual is having a tough time mentally, or for whatever reason, they're feeling compelled that they have to do this.
Yeah.
So they go pull the signs out, and then now all those neighbors are angry because the signs came out. And you have a manager who's in the middle who's got the board member on this side and the homeowners on this side, and they're just getting yelled at.
Yeah, and this
like,
is
what do I do?
Pandemic specific. We deal with this type of person a lot. Someone that just enjoys having that board, and they just, we're going to send a violation letter for this, or we're going to fine them the maximum amount for this. And you sit there and you say, well, listen, whenever I say I work with homeowners associations, a large percentage of the time people are like, ugh, what's that like? You're the individual that's given us that bad rap because of this nonsense that you're pulling. Any insight you could give us how to get through to that psychology, that type of person?
Today's episode is brought to you by Altera Assessment Recovery. Altera provides comprehensive attorney-supervised assessment collection services to community associations throughout California. Trust us with your collection needs. We'll get the job done, done right, and as quickly and efficiently as possible. Altera Assessment Recovery. We're the collection team you've been looking for.
Yeah, that's a very tough question. You know, I won't pretend to have the like easy answers to that.
Uh-huh.
But again, the sort of formula for those people is they're primarily, again, emotionally related, right? They're thinking about things in some emotional way, right? If you think about it, the only reason they get upset about that is because they feel, right, not think, they feel like there would be some disaster to the community, or that they would lose their authority or power, or that, you know, these type of people are often very sort of rigid and obsessive and compulsive type of people. They like everything in a box and everyone to follow the rules and things to be a certain way. They have trouble thinking flexibly and thinking outside of that. So if you can approach them in their emotional way, which again would be, you know, I know you are super into this community, you know. You're one of the most Intuit people that we have on this board, and I really need your buy-in, or would like your buy-in to something that I think would help everybody. and actually use their psychology against them sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or it's actually for them, but say, you know, at one time, we don't really want to have all these rules get relaxed and be a free-for-all. That would be a disaster. But we need to provide some way of making this better, or, you know, something that gives everyone the sense of community and really likes you more, really, like, feeds in. Yes. You've done this for them. What do you think? Do you have any ideas?
So that they respect your authority more moving forward.
Yeah.
Got it.
Which is a lot of work, right? It's like dealing with a child. You have to sort of trick them into things, but that's their psychology.
Yeah.
They're like children in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, they're not, but...
Yeah, but to your point, though, I think that sometimes they need somebody to give them permission, which is why when I asked the question, I said to both of you, because I think, Steve, from a legal standpoint, I think these type A board members, I do think that they feel like, well, if we let this rule go, if we do enough for this one guy, or if we let this one rule go, then, you know, the whole thing is going to fall down.
We're going to set a precedent. And before that, a sinkhole will open up and swallow our whole community, because it's such a blight on the earth. We're going to have trash cans left out past 2 p.m. all the time. And we need to change it, you know.
It's perfect. I mean, and it's back to that fear psychology, right? Mm-hmm. If you understand that people's behavior is probably more motivated by fear than anything, it's a good place to start when you see abnormal or difficult behavior, is to start thinking about, what are they afraid of? What's got them scared that they need to react in this way?
What are they afraid of?
Loss of control. Like you just said, you both were on it big time. Perfect deal. If they're volunteering for a board and they want to be on a board, think, first of all, who likes to do that? What personality type likes mm-hmm. to do that, right? And why do they like that? Right. So there's different types of people, right?
We call it presidentitis.
There you go. And it's same thing in law enforcement, right? From the psychological perspective, I used to do federal government, like for the employee selection and helping figure out what's going on with different people, right? And there was like for federal law enforcement, right? So there's like these different types of person that wants to be a cop, right? There's the social worker, community service person, right? There's the civic-minded, super civic, you know, studied political science, I don't know, law, criminal justice, you know, attorney or cop. Yeah. Mm. And there's the, I want to be in charge of stuff and run the show.
Yeah.
Right? I want to be the guy.
Yeah.
And in general, you can sort of fit people into those general, you know, everyone doesn't fit in a box. But I found, and all my colleagues found, that plus or minus, those people either were in a couple of those boxes or in one of them. And a lot of that authoritarian style, not authoritative, but authoritarian. I'm the boss. I know better. I'm going to tell you how it goes. They like that position. And they're going to creep in there, right? You're going to find them.
I feel like we have a lot of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can imagine, especially in volunteer stuff, because it's not as vetted. When you have to vote and everything, right, your personality comes out. People talk about you. Your record matters, right?
Yeah.
There's mm-hmm. a lot more vetting. And when it's volunteering, it's like, hey, I'll do it. And then all of a sudden, de facto, they're in this very powerful position.
Yeah.
And they're going to let you know all about it, right?
Yeah.
How it should leave.
And they're able to assume.
Right. Yeah, they don't resign.
Their identity is very formed by this. Yeah.
They're able to amass more power by disenfranchising all those that are not like their mindset, or all those that, you know, will challenge them and say, wait a second, why are you so hot to trot on this thing?
Yes.
This is nonsense. And they'll kind of force those, because those people are also volunteers too. So they make their life living heck. So those people resign. Like, we can't be on the board with Russ. This guy's an absolute maniac. But poor, you know, poor management professional there to do his or her job. And we've got to service this community. We've serviced this community for 15 years. Now Russ is in the picture. How am I to deal with this guy?
Yeah.
You know, and you're saying maybe recognize what it is that he's fearful of, or what kind of motivates him, and use that psychology against him.
Yeah.
Or for him.
Or for him, yeah.
For him, but yeah.
It's sort of a way to ease that and get them to the part that does care, that is in it for the right reason, because it's usually there's that there too.
Yeah.
You're accessing that and helping them to feel empowered to do the right thing mm-hmm. versus saying, I'm going to be the person that does the right thing. You need to follow along with it. So those type of people need, you know, that theory of buy-in, like heavy buy-in. They're heavy buy-in people. You have to spend a little extra time, effort, and resource to get them to buy into what you're doing, which generally is to make them think it's their idea, or even plant the seed for them, right? Give them four options, all of which are good, and go, which one do you think is best? Oh, that's genius. Okay.
Yeah.
We were going to go with this other one, but that's great.
Got it.
Right? And then you have the buy-in, and then they feel like they're part of this, and that's that communal thing, versus it's a mutiny on their authority. You know?
Yeah. And that authoritarian streak in them has been, or that itch has been scratched mm-hmm. because you said, hey, you picked the option here. You're calling the shots, person that wants to call the shots. here's the shots that are available to call. You call it, and knowing that any one of them is going to work.
Well, yeah. And I think for managers too, you know, we have the resources. We have the law firm who is a resource, because sometimes as a manager, you have this board member. They are an authoritative figure. I mean, they're our client. We work for them. And a lot of times they see us as the glorified secretary. We're the assistant that just gets things done every day. And sometimes there's value in calling the attorney and saying, hey, Steve, this is what my board president wants to do. I don't think this is a good idea. Would you mind getting on the phone with them? Would you mind sending an email? Mm-hmm. Could you talk them off the ledge? Because they think that you come with a different level of authority mm-hmm. than maybe the manager might.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, sometimes it can help. I mean, in our industry of law, or in our practice space of law, especially when we're bringing and welcoming in new attorneys to the firm, I feel like the most successful attorneys working with these volunteer boards mm-hmm. are the ones that, I don't know what the proper term is, social awareness or emotional awareness or social intelligence, that can kind of get that.
Yeah.
Right? There are attorneys, right? And this is not shit, but they are just very bright people. But no, I'm going to argue A, and if I'm dealing with Russ, the board member, who says, no, I want to go B, I'm going to sit there and pick a fight with, and going to make the whole thing terrible. They kind of lose out on the idea of, like, no, you have to understand the psychology of this individual, because you don't really work for Russ. You work for Russ's association. You want to steer Russ into making the right decision for his association. And as attorneys, we get so fearful, oh, well, Russ might fire our firm, right? Even though we've represented this community, my perspective has been, well, you can't help that.
Right.
You can't help that. You just have to do the job. But to be, I think, a very effective legal services advisor or provider in this space working with volunteers, that level of social understanding or social intelligence has got to be there. Otherwise, you just throw an attorney into the mix with one of these people that we're talking about. They start fighting with each other, and then it just all goes to heck. It's just the chest-beating conversation.
And that's perfectly stated. And that's what that is called. It's formally, it's called emotional intelligence.
Okay.
But also has that social intelligence as well, like not just the individual, but what's the climate, what's the reading.
Yeah.
And in business, you know, they interview for this in corporate and higher management, and they call them soft skills.
Right? Soft skills.
Yes.
Got
people
it.
They want that are soft-skilled.
Soft-skilled. Yes. I got that. Exactly. Well, our attorneys here are very soft-skilled. Yes. We're very hard-skilled, too.
And that's an art, because, you know, it's probably something that is far more difficult to learn, and it's not something you'll get in school.
No.
Right? You mm-hmm. can go to the Harvard Law School, right? You'll learn how to argue at all, right? Or any law school, practically,
yeah.
right? You'll know the law. You'll know how to argue.
Yeah.
Right? And you'll know how
you're
to
be a robust person. That you're right.
How do you give up that and be able to get people to work together? That's a real art. Mm-hmm. And really what you're here to do, right? And what we're talking about, that sense of togetherness and community, and less of that us versus them thing, and the more we're all in this together in that social milieu. And that takes leadership, right? People without that, people that lead that and kind of orchestrate that, it gets very chaotic fast, because as individuals, we're not particularly good at that. We're like part monkey, part bee,
mm-hmm.
right? We've got a part of our psychology that would, when you cross us, we want to eat you alive, right? Kill you, stone you. And another part that will work very hard for the hive and do everything we can to be, you know, make sure that our culture is around and alive. But because we're of dual nature that way, we really do have to have a lot of humility and good leadership and structure. Probably the three biggest things, if you look at any organization that's successful, has those in spades.
So, you know, we're a manager and we're in this situation, we're dealing with these homeowners. Just to kind of summarize it, you know, as a manager, just take a beat, just take a step back, realize the situation that we're in, realize the situation that our residents are dealing with. Don't get so offended that they're yelling at you over the phone. Just try to listen, empathize, meet them where they're at emotionally, right?
Right.
And then solve the problem.
Right. The problem will solve itself often if you just join and are together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it won't. You'll have to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But the two things I'd say that are like universally true that if we worked on as individuals, our culture would be, you know, families, culture, and society in general would be better, is that ability to be empathic and understand other people, not to be afraid and fearful, right, mm-hmm. of those type of things, and not take things personally. If you don't take things personally, man, is your life easy when it's dealing with people. But we're so easy to make things about us and because of us and things like that, and realize things are very rarely personal.
So hard to do that.
It's almost impossible.
It sounds simple, but it's not easy.
No, it's not.
You know, how do you take something personally?
That's why we have a job.
Same kind of thing, especially in this
No way. Joke.
How do you not take something personally, though? When you sit here, we had a dealing with difficult people episode a few weeks ago. We read a bunch of mean tweets, mean Facebook comments, mean email messages that these managers get from homeowners and some other stuff. I don't know. It's borderline, you know, restraining order worthy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just absolute the worst of the worst. How do you not take that personally as an individual?
Yeah, I think the first thing to recognize is that there are things that are personal. And how you check that is you'll know. Right. If you've done something to offend someone or something crazy, most people kind of know, oh, yeah, whoops, that was on me. And you don't feel bad about it. Very interestingly, things that are real, like for real danger, real problems, things that are kind of big, we tend to rally, do well with them and have an approach. Right. Mm-hmm. It's when they're not real that we get very sort of paranoid in our own way and looking for things. So you'll never be more crazy and wound up than about something someone says that's actually not true than if it is true. Right. So people tell me, gosh, you can be very direct. I don't go, oh, my gosh, I can be direct. Yeah, you're right. I can be very direct. Doesn't matter. If they tell me, you know, you're not a very caring person. You don't listen well. Oh, man, that'll drive me nuts because that's my job. Right. I better be good at that. Mm-hmm. So then I start thinking, well, am I? Did I? What? Right. And get all spun up about it.
Got it.
So if you check yourself and check the data that's coming very quickly against reality, which we call reality testing. If you have trouble with that because it's very highly charged, use a community for that, right, which is called consensual reality testing. Ask three of your friends. Ask your family. Ask right people you know. Hey, do you find me this or do you think this is a good – right? Get some feedback from consensus of people and recognize that if it's none of those things and it's not you that's done something, you don't need to own that. That's them. They're upset about something. They're feeling something. It's their deal that they're putting on you wanting you to do it. And that's that helpless and fearful feeling. So if you think that way and recognize a lot of people, especially people that complain or have these kind of problems you're talking about, are very fearful people, right? They overreact about everything and everything's the end of the world. And then they want you to either join them in that or fix it for them. One of those two is usually the kind of the dilemma you're in. Mm-hmm. And realizing that that's nobody's job, really, unless you choose to do that, right? And that will help you depersonalize. So again, it's getting out of the emotional space, right, and into the rational space. And in the thinking rational space, you will know if you have done something and if it truly is personal, right? Because it can be, right?
I'm a manager. I'm always responsive. I always do these things. My clients like me, whatever. And then this homeowner just read it out to me. And then you start sitting there and you know it's not true,
right?
Because you have instant validation. I can look in my same email inbox.
Correct.
To see me being validated and why this isn't mm-hmm. true. But I allow this thing to drive myself crazy. You're saying that's something you need to recognize immediately.
Very quickly and select that thought out. Like literally be in control of your
thoughts. Dismiss it.
You cannot control what you feel or impulses, mm-hmm. right? These, we call them sort of emotions, right? Visceral response. Nor should you. They can be dangerous. They can save your life, right? That sort of immediate response is normal and natural. But you can control what you think about and what you do. So what we need to be conscious of and responsible about in life is just because you feel something doesn't mean it's true. Just because someone says something doesn't mean it's true or real. And then if you want to think about that, a lot, plan on feeling bad because what you think about, so you feel. Mm-hmm. Right? As your thoughts go, so your emotions will follow.
Mm-hmm.
You have to select those out and then your behavior won't become defensive.
Yeah. Feelings are not reality.
No. They're just sensory information. They're chemicals and neural impulses is what they really are to let us know something.
Mm-hmm.
But what that thing is, we need to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when we're in the more strong emotions, which would be like the fearful or angry. Those emotions need to be thought about pretty quickly because they have such bad consequence.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to think about being happy, right?
You know, for me, it's a tough thing to do because a lot of times I find myself more and more now with our board member clients sitting there and they're saying, oh my gosh, I'm working with the community. They want to relax their rules to deal with the recreational activity, skateboarding. One board member say, I don't understand why these other board members are fighting me. And I put myself in a position, well, this board member's been on the board for 30 years. And you mm-hmm. came along, the community's changing. You know what I mean? He's probably reached a station in his life where things are, he feels like he's losing control.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I find myself more and more now, and the crazy thing is that I feel like it's been a referral source to our firm because we're getting more referrals that, well, this is a guy that it's almost like the legal services we provide, or at least I'm providing now on a regular basis, is more counseling than it is actually writing documents and reading documents. It's a, oh, we're so upset about this. What do you think we should do? I think you should slow down and relax and realize this is HOA stuff and you're a volunteer. So calm down, disarm yourself. What's the problem? You know, that's kind of a circumstance, right? You know, yeah. And I'm learning that now.
That's
real
good.
But the challenging thing is, though, is that I'm billing my clients a lot less. So I got to figure out a different way to deal with it. But there's a sense of satisfaction there that's from that. And one of the things I always tell them, like, listen, I understand that you have a bad reaction to that. But you have the choice now to continue to thinking about it or just dismissing
it. That's right.
Right? Well, I feel like I should write another letter to the community against his letter. That I said, what good is that going to do?
Yeah.
Then you're both going to look like children. You know, there's so much of that that's in our space. Why I think it's just crazy to me, the amount of psychology that we have to deal with in order to be effective, because you have people that are all coming together. Nobody's getting paid. There's no ultimate boss.
Yeah.
Right. There's no, you know, brainchild behind this. You know what I mean? It's just a community of neighbors that are, you know, legally required to get together to make decisions that benefit everybody. And you bring in all these different people with different motivations. And it's a tough, really tough thing to wade through.
Yeah.
It's nice for us. We're lawyers. We can play the lawyer card. Well, I told you, because that's the law and we're the lawyers and this is what you need to do. But for community managers, we empathize with significantly because they don't have that on the lawyer card. Even though a lot of them actually know more law than some of the lawyers in our industry, they don't get to do that. And unfortunately, they're having to be there and put in a position of dealing with all these things. And usually they're just complaints. So just the insight that you give on saying, recognize it's not personal. Right. If it doesn't jive with what you think about yourself, you kind of know.
Yeah.
Right then and there, you can dismiss that thought.
Yes.
Right. It's your choice to keep entertaining it and make yourself miserable.
Yeah.
Right.
And to be thoughtful, like you are, even in your conversation route, this is very thoughtful. Thinking, gosh, there's it's very complex because, sort of, in an existential way, there's so much to be gained monetarily and control wise from conflict and problems.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's I work, like I said, primarily with a lot of juvenile criminal kids and family law stuff, which is fueled greatly for that. And I watch things spiral into the hundreds of thousands of dollars that are very simple.
Family law,
yes.
Related disputes.
Very simple.
I could totally
They're very
understand.
Emotional, but they're very simple and they don't need that. But it's very easy to wind up.
Spin them up out of control and just 100%. Run the meter. That happens a lot in our industry, and it's a really sad, sad thing.
Yeah.
Simple problems that I could see. I always say, why are we making a federal case out of this?
Yes.
Right? You know, why are we escalating it to the point, you know, that we are? And yeah, I think unfortunately there's a monetary incentive to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worry about the managers, especially the young managers, you know, people who they're new to this. They're, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. You know, I've built up a good enough wall that I can navigate those things. But, you know, a 20-something manager who's been doing this for a year and a half, 2 years, they're not sleeping at night. They're doing exactly what you said. They're getting criticized. They're getting yelled at. They're going home. They're obsessing about it. And they're not sleeping. And so, and then you tell them, well, don't take it personal. And they look at you like, well, how do I not take it personal? I was the one who got yelled at. So it's important, you know, feeling, you're right. Feelings are not reality, and you do. You have to really dissect it and think about, you know, did I do something? Oh, I didn't. Well, then that's their problem.
Yeah.
They should not sleep at night.
Right.
I'm going to sleep well.
They want to sink your ship too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the importance of, you know, we were talking earlier about some of the articles I had read in preparation for this, and that the Italian psychological community, they were hit, you know, Italy was hit very hard, especially at the beginning of this pandemic, and having a lot of sort of social science on this. We're talking about the need for people to just be educated, psychologically more sophisticated, right? And the reaching out for psychotherapy, not necessarily that it's psychotherapy for mental illness or something like that, but these kinds of more soft skills and training in that and understanding how to do it. And also that it's okay. A lot of people, when they learn, like, oh, this is a thing and it's cool and it's like an evolved way to be, oh, I'll buy into that.
Totally.
They don't think of that. They just think, I'm getting my butt kicked here and I don't like that and I'm going to fight back. Mm-hmm. Instead of really understanding the dynamic, which the best way I've found to look at it is much like in a family system, right? Everything is a system of sorts, culturally or community, and in the family is like where it all starts. But to think about, you know, there's a hierarchy there, there's emotion stuff going on there, there's needs, there's all this stuff, right? And how that works. And if you're authoritative, right, it works good. If you're authoritarian, it doesn't work good. And if you're all loose, laissez-faire, whatever, let's just keep everyone happy, that doesn't work good.
Hmm.
So there's a modicum of this of really sort of from the mental health field, growing up, mm-hmm. right? Being able to be mature, being a master and commander of your thoughts and emotions, and becoming a really evolved person, right? The, mm-hmm. the better, in a better space mentally and emotionally versus reactive. There's no prize for that is the problem.
And I think that as a society, I think that we're moving more to being reactive.
Yes.
We're becoming easily offended, easily reactive, and then 100% lashing
true.
Out.
And that this whole climate has really sort of crystallizing and been a catalyst for that. The worst parts of us right now mm-hmm. Are on full display. Hmm. And it's because of those, you know, certain circumstance. And it's been a very odd circumstance, right? These sort of things came into play at the same time and are really both very powerful and have, not to my knowledge, have never been any, no one's been alive when something like this has happened. So it's sort of new territory, and there's not role models or a, hold on, here's how you deal with this.
Yeah.
Right, we're also
it's okay,
figuring it out.
I've been through this
yes,
before.
Yeah.
There's nobody there to provide that level.
No.
Yeah, I think I told you, I had a manager a few months ago. She was cracking up because I think she sent a violation. She sent something, and a homeowner called her. And the homeowner actually said, well, what did you do during the last pandemic? And she's like, I wasn't alive during the last pandemic. I don't know what we did back then. Yeah. And it's true. I think that, you know, sometimes the homeowners feel like we're doing something to them or that we're not responding appropriately. And we're all figuring it out at the same time.
Yeah.
I think just meeting people at their emotions, I think that's the most powerful thing I've taken away from this conversation. It's something I can understand intuitively, but once you articulate it, you get it there. They're hypercharged in an emotional state. You've got to step onto their playing field, right, before you can sit there and hope to, hope to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you make a great point too that we're at our emotional worst and it's all on display. So let's just acknowledge that.
Yeah.
You know,
we're all in it together. together.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get that homeowner who's on the other phone who is reaming you a new one. Recognize that this is them at their worst, and you know, right or wrong, that's just
they're human beings.
They're human beings.
Yeah. We're all human beings.
Yep.
But if they're crazy, if they're this class A person, disengage.
That's it.
Let them go.
Yeah.
You're not failing because they're not, you know, seeing it your way.
And it's not your job to educate them or help them or do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the job of someone that they asked to do that or uh-huh. that they have that relationship with, which because they're that way is probably no one. Right? It's very rare. Even when I get that style of person as a patient, they're very difficult to deal with because they don't want to behave like a patient. Right. So when I went to therapy or when I'm in that position, I have to be a patient. I can't be Dr. Galindo at my doctor. That doesn't fly. Right.
Yeah.
That means you're a bad patient. You're a hassle. Right.
Yes.
So that ability to be humble and sort of inquisitive and introspective is very difficult for that personality type. I mean, very difficult, not kind of very. And
got
so
it.
even professional help often is minorly helpful. So it really is best, and what I try to advise people is don't get hooked up into that drama and their world because they need people too and friends too and social environment. Unfortunately, you're going to be on their program if you're in that sort of social entanglement with someone uh-huh. like that. So my best advice to people is don't do that.
Don't do that.
Right. There's a lot of people, and like I said, it's a small minority, right? This is not like every other person. The problem with really abnormal or problematic behavior is it gets generalized. You start seeing it as like all these people are all doing it. It's very small amount. Even during the riots, you know, out here, part of my job is the mobile field force. You know, we had to respond to a lot of the different cities that were having these. And, you know, oh, the place is burning down. It's going to heck. When you look at the amount of people there, it's a few hundred people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's very small in aggregate.
Yeah.
Less than one neighborhood in a giant city, right, if you sort of emptied it out.
Mm-hmm.
So to also think that way so you don't get cynical, you don't overgeneralize, and you remember to have empathy and compassion for these people, you know. You don't have to put up with them, and you have to be, you know, have good boundaries. But at the same time, understand what you're dealing with, right? Don't engage in it and get in this, like, you know,
just have some
ego
grace.
Battle with them.
Yeah, just have some grace for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so smart. I think that's the hardest thing for us to do, but it's so smart.
Yeah. Because your emotions, when you're being attacked, come before you can even think. It's nanoseconds is the actual word that neuropsychology uses to explain the time you sense danger, which can be from annoyance to murder, right? I mean, that range of anger or danger mm-hmm. is very wide. it takes a nanosecond for that to hit your brain and for the neurochemistry to start sending all kinds of cortisol and the norepinephrine and the, you know, adrenaline into your system to get you ramped up to fight or flee. And it's against your will. You don't have a choice. Your body will do that. You have to learn how to override it. So well, the initial response is, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arr. That's why I always say take a breath. That's mm-hmm. always my first thing is take a breath. Because you're right. You know, you get that person on the phone and you do, and you get charged up immediately. And then you're no longer listening to what they're saying. You're just waiting for them to stop talking so that you can yell back.
That's great.
Right? Yeah. So it's just like, yeah.
Just thinking about what you're going to say next.
Are you done yet? Are you done?
Are you done? So yes. I could scream at
you. Yeah, I need to know. I need to attack you.
But
yeah.
You're right. You know, you have to take that pause. That's the only way that you can get yourself recentered so that you can actually engage with them in the way that they need you to.
Yeah.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. We'd also like to thank Dr. Galindo for your time and expertise today. Make sure to visit our website at tinleylaw.com if you haven't already, where we break down this episode. Then stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so
thank
much.
Thank you. Okay.
To share or subscribe to the Tinley Talks podcast, visit us at tinleylaw.com. There you can find links to everything discussed in this episode, locate helpful resources, check out other episodes, and submit questions for future topics. And be sure to tune in next month for our next episode. As always, the views and opinions expressed by the podcast, its presenters and guests do not constitute legal advice. For more information on the topics discussed in today's podcast, please consult with your association's legal counsel. This is Tinley Talks, presented by Tinley Law Group, your community, your counsel.